Hello and welcome to IMP's AEW Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review, give a donation directly through Red Circle, and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Order merch from all our shows over at chopped-tees.com. Thank you to Dickie. Read the Social Suplex newsletter. Shout out to Trish and Tim, as always, and to every person who's contributed so far. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art with Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and Sam Brown's Mystery Show. My name is Matt Meyer, a.k.a. Imp, and this is your quick look back at the AEW week that was. 30 minutes of not talking about the brand new ratings. Not talking about it. All I'll say is I highly recommend a piece that Andy from WrestleJoy wrote about, where it seemingly somebody's breaking down how it actually works, how it actually records it, how all of the pitfalls and problems with the actual, with the way that the technology is recording the data and how it's being put together. If you care, recommend reading that. I'm not going to talk about it. Let's just talk about the product instead, which, you know, obviously a bit ironic given I was interested enough to read that article, to read that thing, but I'm not going to talk about it here, because this is mostly just a show talking about what was on the wrestling shows themselves. But yes, you are going to be seeing a lot of ratings talk, just not here. I've directed you to a good place where you can learn about it. But that's not here. I'm sure Trish and Sarah will be really, really happy about having a brand new rating system that everybody will definitely understand and react to totally normally. I'm sure they're chuffed and so happy at that. Anyway, this week we were in Daly's Place, Jacksonville, Florida, the home of AEW, for their homecoming title Tuesday show and Collision. A second 2.5 hour show in a row, for me that flew by, especially the first hour of title Tuesday Dynamite. Collision felt like it was the same kind of quality of Collision we'll be getting recently, where it does feel like whenever I watch a Collision, I do feel like, yeah, that was definitely worth watching. It does the job of getting me hyped for Dynamite. It doesn't matter how I'm feeling on the day, it doesn't matter how tired I am, how just busy with other things in my head I am. By the time I finish Collision, I'm excited for Dynamite again. So proof that it's doing its job. It's also got an air of, it's not the end of the world if you don't watch it. It's an interesting balance that we have where I never regret watching it, but it also like, yeah, but if you are an AEW fan and you're trying to figure out how can I fit it all in, like, it is absolutely fine to not watch Collision. It's an interesting balance for me to be like, no, it's totally worth it, but it's not the end of the world if you miss it. But also, when you do watch, it is totally worth it. I'll just use that first half of that statement where if I'm saying, oh yes, dear, with the other company, if I were to say it's that show where it's not the end of the world if you miss it, normally that's just paired with because nothing happens or something like that. I never feel like that when I come out of Collision. I always feel like things have moved forward just as much as I do coming out of a Dynamite, and that's kind of credit to somehow hit that without it being the end of the world if you miss it. It's a Saturday show, people are busy, things happen. I was one said viewer before I started doing this format. I hardly watched Collision, I just didn't have the time to. Covering the other company, I was already covering like 6 hours of wrestling television a week. Never mind getting towards AEW. We're in a happier place now. But this week started off with a face-to-face between Adam Page and Samoa Joe. So let's jump on over and start with that. Start with that excellent promo that kicked off Dynamite. So let's jump on back to a Daly's Place, Jacksonville, Florida, for the homecoming return of AEW. Samoa Joe, all dressed up for the occasion in a navy suit, hangers confused at Joe's actions last week, like a good D&D player giving his opponent the space to explore his character, telling Joe he asked for this match at WrestleDream because he owes him. Joe outright told the champion that he sees him as a pretender, because if the ops didn't have hangers back, he wouldn't be the man right now. Flat out calling him no champion, called the gratitude fake, like, no, I provided the opportunity, I'm just out here to collect what's owed. Just really love this for Joe's character. So to have a babyface character call another babyface character not the heroic champion, even though he helped him, and they're not shifting alignments or anything. It's just a genuine disagreement, being like, well, you're acting righteous, but how are you better than the others when you needed help to win? Sets up the match really well, where Hangman proves he doesn't need the help to retaining it someone like Joe. Joe promised that when it comes to that penultimate moment where Paige could prove himself, that's when Joe is going to choke him out and provide the world with a rightful champion. Hangers had absolutely none of Joe calling him a fraud, informing Joe that he's wrong, that when he goes for that choke and beats Paige's ass, he will ultimately not succeed. Just a great little promo battle, set up this being a proving moment for the champion rather than the challenger really well. We're coming off what I'll call nuisance defences. Like with the MJF stuff, just the kind of person he's defending against isn't exactly what Paige had in mind. However, when it comes to Samoa Joe, it's someone that he does respect, and even though he's very confused about what happened last week, he's not rewarding him this because he threw a tiff and got under Page's skin. He's rewarded in this because of the way that Hammond won the title. He legitimately does owe Samoa Joe. And I love the way that their history ties into this as well. Because with Joe's last encounter with Hangman, why would Joe hold like utmost respect for this man, given like the downturn that Hangman was on with the whole swerve angle at the time, where Hangman in a AEW championship match purposely lost so a different guy wouldn't win? Why would Joe respect him? It makes all the sense in the world. The Ops did not want the Death Riders to have the title, totally understood. But Joe totally being on the side of Hangman being a rightful champion, him just not aligning with that makes so much sense. And they did a really good job here of showing just the animosity between them and just the anger that Joe is feeling. But neither of them turned straight bad guy. None of them do that in this one. They set up a character having to prove himself, but Joe doesn't come out of this as the villain or anything, which is a very difficult line to balance, especially when you've had wrestling fans conditioned for such a long time where you've got your villain and you've got your hero, and a tweener character will flip-flop between those roles rather than straight up feeling like an in-betweener in the ring. Here they've done such a great job where you've got two babyface characters, you've got two goodies, and you totally understand where both sides are coming from, and now Paige has got to prove himself in that righteous manner, which I just feel like it's a great character though. And it honestly feels like at this point this is a championship reign that I just want to go on for a very long time. Like, we're almost in the very early stages of a Hangman, I don't want to call it a righteous run the entire way, but especially this first phase of it, where he still feels like he's setting up the kind of champion he's saying he wants to be. MJF was establishing that fact. Kyle Fletcher was like a newcomer trying to take the throne. But Joe is listening to the words Hangman is saying and going, well, prove it then. And I said that the Kyle Fletcher match was possibly, that's the point where Hangman really feels like the champion he's saying he's going to be. And I thought Fletcher was going to be that final kind of proving point, but just having it front and center here with Joe. Fair to say, I mean, quite a lot of applause. I love this. Even having his first three title defenses being, this is the champion I want to be, I'm going to be the champion, okay, prove it then. And with these three first challenges, then you're all set for the rest of the reign of Hangman. Just a really smart way if you're going to have a long reign, just to set it up like that. This is me saying this with a huge assumption. This was maybe like the first three title defenses of at least six more, of at least like two more acts. Act one of the Hangman title reign, totally in. I'm saying this as a bare minimum as well. For all I know, the first act isn't over yet, but this feels like such a great way to just be establishing the kind of champion you want Hangman to be. Moving on into the backstage bits. Mark Briscoe hyped up his fellow conglomerators in only the way he uniquely can. Roddy's too cool for them though. He's still not on board. Paquette outside TK's office with the broke books, banging on the door, desperate for a money match. Nick put it plainly, I need money and I need it now. Sometimes it's absolutely fine to have the character say what they want. I feel like in this comedic fashion, it's absolutely fine. And we would see them kind of make their own money match late in the show. Don Callis with all his men, aside from Andrade, which led to a week of memes of people going, Andrade's expected back in the WWE. Yep. Last week I called him the modern day Jeff Jarrett. If you were watching along with the WWE stuff in the 90s, Jeff Jarrett did his fair few moves. That's why he's got at least four or five. So, you know, Andrade, he's got to cut up his pace a bit. Like, he's lagging behind Jeff. He's still got a few more to go. But he knows that it's WWE, AEW, WWE, AEW. Technically, he's on his fourth run. He's actually right up there. I do apologise, Andrade, for smirching your name in the comparison to Jeff Jarrett. You are actually up there in terms of numbers. Renee sets up that if either of Brody or Bandido pinned Okada tonight, that they'd be up for a title shot. But there was no fear from Don. He was certain his family was going to be bringing home the tag team titles. Oi, 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 tangerine balls. Oh, it's great to have Pac back. In spite of the haircut. Is it just me? I look at that Pac and be like, no. It's no. Not a fan of the fringe, of the bowl cut. It's not quite a bowl cut, but you know. I'm not there for it. Wheeler got his moment, but a wee little note as Garcia started talking before Wheeler had finished and got a tad of a side eye. So immediately I'm like, please AEW, let this be the sign that you are immediately from day one almost just building Wheeler Yuta versus Daniel Garcia. At the moment, they're kind of getting along. It's not enough to become an actual rift, but Wheeler Yuta and Daniel Garcia were never like fully together. Just immediately showing that there is that friction there. Speedball and Kevin Knight with Willow to be interviewed by Renee. Willow, I think, I can't remember, at the start of Collision where everyone's doing their little jabber talky stuff, Willow was inside the Jacksonville Jaguars' mouth, just being like, oh yeah! Which I really like. Here they were hyping up their Collision six-person tag match. After the break, Stokely with FTR to introduce Penelope Ford and Megan Bain. Who needs hoes when you have two bad bitches? Top Gods out. Wasn't buying the Top Gods thing. As soon as I heard that name, I was like, ah, that's wrestling corny bullshit. Sometimes I am totally in for it, like evil hologram. I'm totally in for that bollocks. But I feel like with the top god's name, it's not trying to be corny. I'm not measuring it on, oh, that's a good laugh. I'm measuring it on, oh, you're trying to be cool with that name. Anyway, we'll get to that Collision main event. I thought it was fantastic. John Moxley versus Tomohiro Ishii. Talking about fantastic. Oh, the memories of Air Ishii back in the G1 Climax between these two. They had such an amazing match at Korakuen Hall. God, that was 7 years ago. Not to make myself feel old, but a tournament I covered. Bloody hell. Mox had his plan, but he made the ultimate mistake of forgetting that in wrestling, all foreigners have hard heads. And Ishii no-sold a ring post spot and instead just hyped up. Ishii's nose busted with a bit of nose blood dripping down, which led to Mox delivering corner punches after dipping his knuckles in said blood. You know, he's normal, he's Mox. A great little bit after, as him halting before hitting the 10 punches to give the crowd the finger was a short enough distraction for Big Tom to powerbomb him down, which was the burst that ignited your classic Ishii striking fire. You know how this goes. John can stomp his head into the mat, but he's got no neck. But a minute later, it'll be John's head that's getting bit. Not even a snap paradigm shift could keep Tomo down. Excalibur tying the bloody nose into the finish really well as he explained how Ishii was having to breathe out of his mouth during the choke. It's a great little fight here. And a great little Tomohiro TV match. All for it. And also, to keep John Moxley in that first match of AEW Dynamite, which I really, really like. I love the Death Riders in this spot. And a street fight between the Demand and the Hurt Syndicate. Don't you worry, you're going to be getting plenty of these pairings. Just almost in the just... This was something I was critical of for WWE in their really bad period, where they would just... They'd have their match and they just would repeat it over and over again. That's not quite what's happening here, but to see we're getting that Demand versus the Hurt Syndicate like three times within the span of a month, like, it's not every week, but it is a lot. It is a lot. But to be fair as well, I am a strong believer in thing doesn't equal bad, it's more thing done badly. And this isn't an issue when it's not happening with every single match, with every single segment and feud. You're not watching them wrestle every single week. It's not a problem across the board. They've done it specifically for this feud. No, it's fine. I'm not going to kick up about it. Tank tops and dark jeans versus three men brawling in their suits, shirts and trousers. The Hurt Syndicate are dressed like they're going to the club called Taz, as Bobby and Shelton did damage at ringside. A very messy match, but it was nonsense fun. MVP again the man to suck up any Gates of Agony dominance, but he was the one man with the superpower to find Ricochet in all of his hiding spots. Like, hey, that's a balanced game. Like, he's your weakest man, but you need him to get to the opposition's leader. That's good balancing. All five of the lads brawled at ringside in front of the stage fans before Ricochet pelted it across the stage and sent us into ad break, diving onto all of them. No pinfall attempted, as all six were just game to keep fighting. A table propped against the stage just within shot the entire time. Eventually the owner was groggy against it, but Khan launched a chair at charging lashes, and into the wood the big man was tossed. A second table was set up by the bottom right ring post. A tight fit for Khan to elbow drop off the apron, which I feel like is long-term storytelling for what happened this weekend in terms of that being a very tight spot maybe being a problem. You're also damn right we got a barricade charge. The owner crashed MVP through it, leaving poor Shelton all alone with all three Demand boys. Demand dudes? I feel like it's corny enough to call them the Demand dudes. Shooting Star Press didn't break the table at all, but a strange crash with MVP crashing more lads onto it sure did. Like, I've not seen that before. Something like a Shooting Star Press doesn't break the table, so instead of trying to repeat a spot where you slam one guy through it or whatever, no, crash three men into it. Surely it's going to break. They're like, there's no chance it won't break. There's so much man meat that table is going to break. Crowd were all still in though, chanting this is awesome for the wee punching spree afterwards. Speaking of, Benjamin's run of fire looks awesome as always, really highlighted after by Ricochet's light tickle kicks in comparison, finally giving us Leona and Lashes charging at each other with no effect lariats before big bobbly one out now and hit a spear, then out ringside for that mighty spine buster through another table. But there's one more table left in the ring for the dickhead, and it was easily the best break of them all. The Hurt Syndicate beat up Ricochet before Benjamin German tossed the man through the table propped lower on the second turnbuckle. Great little final spot. A different way to go through a table before we are then set up to be getting the Hurt Syndicate versus the Demand in a 3-on-3 trios tag match at WrestleDream. So we do the dance again, and that's why I brought up kind of WWE a bit, where this is kind of what we would see. Where it's 50-50 booking, where one wins, then the other one wins, then you have to settle a match. I mean, WWE is almost like no one would get over, but they did that for everybody. That's when it becomes a problem. It's all right for one feud. That is okay. It's not thing equals bad. It's thing equals bad when you do that for everything because you don't have any other ideas. And unsurprisingly, none of their mid-card were getting over. Like, who could have thought in that period, that booking where you book everybody to win, lose, win, lose, no one gets momentum, so nobody gets over. That's not what's happening here. If anything, like, everybody involved is getting increasingly over. After that was the Jurassic Express versus John Jobberson, because I did not write down the jobber names. That will be a theme for this week. Last week, I made an effort. This week, fuck yous. Fuck the lollies. Now a man and his dinosaur. Shots of Matt and Nick in the crowd having bought tickets, but they were either side of two kids with the gag being that they couldn't get two tickets together. Before commentary said anything, I just assumed they got tickets with their kids. And I thought that was absolutely fine. Beach Ball's out in the crowd for the Jurassic Express Team 2. Perry with his baddie antics, not quite edged away. That awesome lift into a powerbomb called the Countdown to Extinction for the win. The Bucks immediately down to attack after the bell, resorting to kicking a dinosaur in the dick before hitting the BDE trigger to Daly's Place booth. Nick grabbed the mic, like, "Hey, Jack, in the wrestling business, we call this a callback," before striking him in the stomach just like Perry did to Omega back when. Asked for a match at Wrestle Dream and posted booze up in the corner. So we're getting Jurassic Express versus the Young Bucks. Then in our Title Tuesday, we got our first title match. Kyle versus Kyle, Fletcher versus O'Reilly. As we all know, O'Reilly can't stand anybody else named Kyle. Fletcher's whole gimmick is to get his opponents to say his full name. So there was a lot on the line here. Lots of Kyle, Kyle, and let's go Kyle, Kyle sucks, joining chants and this is Kyle later on as the crowd enjoyed the banter. Fletcher in the bright hot pink again as Florida deserves the one set. That's all you're getting. Be better, Florida, and you will be getting a better diversity of gear. O'Reilly went for the dismantling route, targeting the champion's left leg and arm before using that to try and chop the Aussie down. Drove the man's left shoulder into the apron, then a dragon screw on the left leg before that awesome diving knee into the corner. But all the champion needs is those flash moments to just murder the man. Lawn Dart Jones over here. A genuine quote from Taz. O'Reilly got close going back to that left knee right at the end, but that running corner kick and sheer drop brainbuster combination is just as lethal as ever. A wee Don Callis family conglomeration brawl afterwards. Mark Briscoe got a music pop entrance and final stare with the backing off TNT champion. After the break, an Aussie in pain got interviewed by Renee, Paquette informing him that Tony Khan has made the match between he and Briscoe for Wrestle Dream. Both lads at 2 wins each. I like the little elevation they've been doing for Mark Briscoe. To a point where in my head I even questioned, oh, what would happen if he did win? Long term I still feel like you gotta sit with Kyle Fletcher. But if there's a criticism about modern wrestling, it's not striking on something when it's hot. But then I ask the question that, do AEW actually need to strike on Mark Briscoe? Is this a character note that's good for Fletcher? I feel like is my main point. He's the long term investment. If the note works for Fletcher, for his character long term, to have this blip like this where Mark Briscoe actually bests him, and 100% do it. The crowd would love it, the crowd would be behind Mark Briscoe. You get that feeling of, oh yeah, they're striking on something that's hot at the moment with Mark Briscoe. But really you're doing it for Fletcher. Like long term, that's the reason we're giving him this notch. Not every notch in the belt has to be a positive one. Gotta do the Cody Rhodes adversity. Gotta give those hurdles for Fletcher to climb over. Or, you know, he's just the greatest wrestler ever and he doesn't lose. He can always go the Gunter route. There are two different sides. Wrestling's not all universally the same. TBS Championship, Monet's Florida Open Challenge. So it's Mercedes Monet versus, answering the call was Lacey Lane. For those who don't know, Excalibur hyped how Lane impressed in a Ring of Honor match against Shirakawa. But the amount of people I saw who completely missed Mercedes being very specific last week about wanting a challenger specifically from Florida. On Blue Sky, we're seeing loads of people just suggesting different names. On our Discord, seeing people suggesting, oh, they should do this person, and I'm just sat there being like, she said Florida. None of the people you suggested are from Florida. The only one I saw which was legitimately from Florida was Izzy. And I was like, part of me was just like, but that's them doing NXT lore. As cool as that match would be, don't think it's an AEW match. It doesn't make sense because it's not their lore. It's not their history. And Tony Khan seems to recognise the history without making it a vital component to the storylines. Or at least that's where he seems to be now. This match itself, a great pop for Lacey's roll through super kick and a vibe so similar to the Open Challenge showcase that was Cody Rhodes' TNT Championship run during the pandemic. Some surprisingly great little moves in front of a crowd that sounded like...
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers. But that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
They weren't really fancying a match as long or back and forth as this. Or they just weren't buying Lane's offense. But that fireman's carry into the leg drop, like, that was crazy good. And it got nothing. That crowd did not respond to that. And I was like, that was great. That was awesome. Money maker for the win. We move on. But I am a sucker for those open challenge vibes where the challenger really could be from anywhere. And this was something that, for me, that was what was special about the Cody Rhodes one. Some weeks you had a challenger like this. We're like, oh, wasn't expecting them. But you're not exactly like massively hyped about it. But you have a decent time watching the match. It's fun enough. But it did just mean that every single week you genuinely didn't know. And you need, when you're doing an open challenge thing, you genuinely need open challenge accepting people like this. But it's someone who's like maybe had a dance within the company, but it's not like a big name jumping over. It's not somebody you've not seen in a really long time that you're really excited for. Not all of them are going to be Eddie Kingston, Ricky Starks, kind of arrivals and debuts and things. But anyway, yeah, Lacey Lane, she was good, but the crowd didn't care. And they never believed it. They never believed she could be a challenger. So when they're going through those close near fall spots, the crowd were kind of kindly applauding when they were never buying any of them. For me, she was good. I did enjoy it. The bar from the women's division currently is so high. Like, I'm assuming quite a few people were expecting something special, or maybe some people had convinced themselves it was Izzy, even though in my mind that would make no AEW sense. Anyway, after that we got, I was going to say this was my favourite match of the week, my favourite match of the show. I think my favourite match of the week is the Collision main event, but Double Jeopardy Eliminator Brodido versus Konosuke Takeshita and Kazuchika Okada from a wee little showcase open challenge to top established lads. Whichever team wins gets a shot at the opposition's title. Bandido's left shoulder heavily taped up, which was important to the finish, for a stretch leaving Brodido to fight alone against Don Callis duo. Okada and Takeshita not being on the same page, the eroding factor for the baddies, not breaking down here, but I think we know what's going to happen at WrestleDream. Or at least the thing that breaks the camel's back will happen at WrestleDream. Brody eventually made the tag, and mistiming on kick from Takeshita gave Brandido the room to flow against Okada and into an amazing double team with King pile driving Okada after a stiff Bandido knee. Looked amazing. The flow completely reversed with Konosuke now by himself and the tag champions doing their doggy woofs. Takeshita so impressive, deadlifting big boy Brody for both a German and a blue thunderbomb. But with Bandido the legal man, there was yet again another miscommunication that crashed Okada down. Then the Ring of Honor champion's turn to be impressive. One arm lifted Takeshita up onto his shoulders. Really impressive. A wee reminder of how hot their Ring of Honor match was earlier this year. Before the slight beat off on the timing, but it's fine, self-tag in from Okada won the match in reaction to a pissed Konosuke. After the break, in a backstage hallway with Renee, Bandido showed self-doubt, blaming himself for the loss. A really good character note here. Brody hyped his partner back up, promising to leave WrestleDream still with the tag champions. And that they will. That they will. I mean, I say that, I feel like Brodido are so hot, keep the titles on them. I feel like his story with Okada and Takeshita is bubbling up really well. Keep the story bubbling, take it to that next page. It's either that or you make them champions knowing it's going to break down. Like, the second they win the titles, that ticking time bomb, the timer has begun as soon as they win those titles. God damn it, I've talked myself into a possible scenario where they win and it's okay. Like, god damn it. The main event, Pac versus Orange Cassidy. A main event made for me. No Death Riders or conglomeration, with the two agreeing to just have a wrestling match. I love how AEW can have two characters say that and we're conditioned to actually believe them, rather than what I'm used to from the other place in. Well, I just wonder what the other screwy interference ending is going to be. And then I was wrong. I was wrong. This was a nonsense screwy interference ending in a way. A very intense walkout from Singlet Pack. What a heel. He went to the gym today and yesterday. Oh, what a heel. Set the tone for an altered Geordie style from what we're used to. Not as jumpy and flippy and athletic and speedy and quick. A lot more precise and a lot more thought and reasoning behind everyone. The Tyneside Death Rider, more than familiar with Cassidy's antics, trying to will the man into a more serious and intense bout. You can't make Cassidy do anything though. He'll try when he feels like it. Proof as he jumped with his hands in his pockets off the corner through a ringside table, and a standing ovation for his rotating spinning DDT and kip up shortly after. Pac did his own version of the Orange Cassidy roll away, retreated up the stage to lure Orange out into the stage crowd. Tombstone Piledriver dropped the poor Orange before he was kicked down the steps, but Pac couldn't move after, because a sneaky Darby Allin had cuffed the Geordie's ankle to the barricade and gave him two middle fingers. Pac still made it back to the ring, just breaking the chains with a big old thick leg pull, and jumped over the top rope before the 10 count, but a jumping roll through caught him and snuck the win for Cassidy. After the match, Darby Allin properly out with something in his hand and a crazed look in his eyes. Mace was sprayed into Wheeler's eyes and a Knight's Touch with Euler getting tossed over the announce desk, landing right at Danielson's feet. Mox desperate to fight the man, but charging up the ramp towards the parking lot, Darby was in wait with a Molotov cocktail. It's like, oh, okay, fire again. Oh, okay, this is a bit of a step up. Then actual logic saying hello for a moment as security stopped Darby. Boo! Get me logic out of my wrestling. Give me nonsense. Give me wrestling bollocks, damn it. What do you mean they tackled him because he had a Molotov cocktail? They're in a feud, it's okay. It's that's abiding by law, right? that's the law. If you're in a wrestling feud, you can do whatever. You can invade people's houses, it's fine. But yeah, when Darby Allin did the interference ending, I was like, oh, I'd literally written down, applause. applauding you about how I can believe that two people will say there won't be interferences and there won't be interferences. Both people were being honest because there was no conglomeration, there was no Death Riders. Darby Allin is a man acting on his own. Orange Cassidy wasn't doing anything like that. But it's still an interference ending, so it kind of wipes my point. That said, we did then build into a Molotov cocktail spot. It turns out, like, what are they teasing? On two occasions now, Darby Allin has come out with fire devices. I'm not explicitly saying he's going to throw a Molotov cocktail onto John Moxley. I'm not saying we're going to get that. But it's fair to say the teasing of fire has been front and center. Almost like a pinky promise of something. Something pyro-related. Darby Allin is fixed on doing something fire-related. Who knows how it's going to end up? What kind of stunt they've got planned? What kind of stunt they've been practicing for us? And what doesn't help if we've already been conditioned because of the whole Jack Perry thing. Like, when Darby introduces fire, somebody gets set on fire. That's the expectation now. Not just a fire table spot, somebody on fire. Anyway, that was Dynamite, the title Tuesday. Not many titles. not many titles, really. Not a lot of Tuesday, because I didn't watch it till Thursday, my normal day for watching it. Anyway, let's jump on over to Collision, returning to Daly's Place, Jacksonville, Florida. I've already talked about how I felt about Collision when I started the show, but yeah, enjoyed it. Did its job again of hyping me up for Dynamite. And unfortunately, though, the very first segment was Kota Ibushi versus Josh Alexander. Ah, yes. After seeing the news about Kota Ibushi's injury early in the week, I kind of just assumed this match was going to be cut, but now it was heavily included, and you could just see the level of stuff that they had planned to spin off of this match, and very quickly they had to improvise ways of doing a Mark Davies sudden return, getting Kenny Omega to jump out and do his thing, having it all tie into Jack Perry. Like, there was a lot of spinning plates here. Unfortunately, one of the plates completely fell, and the kind of injury that we're seeing, like, we're talking about a femur injury, where that is a long recovery, and when you come back, you're not normally as strong as you used to be. It's a very bad one. So we'll see. And Kota Ibushi's put out messages about thanks for everybody's been reaching out to him. But anyway, we'll jump to that. We'll do this segment first, then we'll go through the show of Collision. So let's get a sound clip from Kota Ibushi versus Josh Alexander. Going for some kind of spin or move off of Fireman's Carry up top. Momentum had them falling backwards though, and Alexander, it seemed like to me, he did his best to push Ibushi away from the ropes or the apron, but sent him very close to the barricade because there's just not a lot of room there. The spill was still nasty, almost like the cruel beast of wrestling, where you can pull off the most elaborate shit, but then something like where Pac broke his ankle doing a baseball slide. Anything can happen to anyone at any point. This one obviously was a move went wrong, and the different factors coming into play just meant that the landing was pretty dangerous. My gut instinct was Alexander did a lot to actually save from something truly horrific happening by pushing him away from both the corner of the ropes and the apron, but that then meant he sent him to a barricade because there's just really not much room. That's what I was talking about with the Hurt Syndicate earlier. Their table spot ended up looking a little bit awkward, but here it ended up being genuinely dangerous. The match itself was building nicely. Alexander happened to be working over the man's leg, build to that eventual ankle lock. The two were flowing really well. A lovely snappy pace after the break. Like, yeah, it felt great to see Ibushi with that spark again. Don Callis filled in well after when the injury happened in the ring talking shit. Then Mark Davies' return was just so improvised into something far less impactful than what I assume was planned. Came out and started punching a very definitely injured Kota Ibushi in the face. But that's because they need something to bring out Kenny Omega, because that was the next note. Kenny Omega on out to make the run out save with a trash can launching it. And then later on we got that final note where Kenny Omega is in the same locker room the Elite used to hang out in back in the day, delivering a to camera promo on Jack Perry when the man himself knocked on the door. He's sorry about what happened to Ibushi, and Kenny may not be able to trust him, but they do currently have the same enemies. A segment that included the line, big dumb dinosaur, I don't give a fuck. Kenny Omega trying to sound cool and tough as he speaks to Jack Perry and then has to say that sentence. I bring it up every time. One of my most recent favourite things is Kip Sabian going, stupid dinosaur. So yes, I'm going to love Kenny Omega doing this line. Big dumb dinosaur, I don't give a fuck. Just like, yeah, I'm a cool guy. Be a really unfortunate injury, really sucky injury as well. Long recovery time, and then when you come back, the likelihood of you being the same level of athleticism is very difficult to get to. But wish him a speedy recovery. And we move on to Big Beal and Brian Keith versus Anthony Bowens and Max Caster. Once again, immediate self-tags before the former acclaimed got into any of the action. This time the fighting like school kids happened to float into a snap win. Big Beal sent spinning to the outside. Caster got kicked by Keith, but Bowens bowed in with a stiff forearm for the win. After the match, the man is calling to camera, I did it, I won all by myself. He did not. But we started to see in the moment teamwork between them begin to blossom. Backstage after that, Juice and his two Austins had their talk interrupted by the Angry Losers, which bubbled into a match next week. Just a wee little segment of multiple tag team teams getting a nice little continuation bubble of their characters. Speaking of, TJ versus two women. I told you I did not make a note of the jobber names this week. Just a quick wee AEW jobber dance. After Tay and Anna expressed their tag title interest 2 weeks ago, a gory special and prettier position thing into a mellow knee for the win. Cool little finisher. Excited to see that in a contested match. Onto our patented backstage bits for Collision. Only got two this week. Technically the Kenny Omega thing, but that fits into the other stuff pretty strongly. Conglomeration backstage. Orange Cassidy completely unaware what a Kyle Fletcher is. He's Kyle too? No, he's Kyle Fletcher. Damn it. He actually made me chuckle at that dad joke level of humour. Widow hyped up and ended up woofing about her six-person mixed tag against FTR and Megan Bain. She had a reason to be hyped. It was great. They showed Moxie and Darby brawling during a New York Comic Con special, leading into a serious stairwell promo, with Shafir calling him a little weirdo, Garcia ribbing him for having no meaning or structure to him or anything he does. Pac obviously angry too, calling the wee man a pathetic embarrassment. Marina had to quell a laugh at, "You put your painted little schnoz in our business." Take it that's not a phrase said often in America. just sometimes it's, whenever Pac speaks, maybe just watch Marina Shafir's face as he just says the craziest shit. Like, he started this week with oi 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 tangerine bollocks. Like, he's straight in there. He's just straight in there. Tony Storm, Harley Cameron and Chris Statlander versus Triangle of Madness. A wee fun little six-woman tag in the middle of our Collision. Bubbled up well enough, but Tony got to ignite us into a quicker run of pace after the ad break. Avoided the Death Triangle teamings and got the hot tag stat. Even Harley got to suplex Tekla. A wee stare down moment between Storm and Stat, just avoiding a miscommunication moment, but it caused enough of a distraction for a jump and poor Harley Cameron paid the price. Tekla spear for the win as McGuinness hyped them up as just having far better team cohesion. Statlander and Cameron backstage promo with Lexi afterwards. Harley is still searching for a tag partner, but Stat is busy. Wheeler popped his head in, but then said busy jumped on in shouting, "Come on then, Stat Daddy," before popping her shirt open and bumping chest with her Wrestle Dream opponent. There is no one like Tony Storm. Continuing to be decisively weird. Triangle of Madness also got their own backstage bit, except for an interview before Jamie Hayter and Queen Aminata jumped them to shout all hyped about Blood and Guts on November 12th. I think they just shouted, "November 12th, at them. Like a mystery TNA promo. Katsuyori Shibata promo. Through text-to-speech on his phone, challenging Rush to pick two of his six stablemates to face the ops for the AEW Trios titles. Only Shibata could get away, flexing his muscles with a text-to-speech cutting the promo for him. The exact opposite as coming across tough with ease. MXM TV versus a second week attempting a casting call open challenge. For me, Mansoor's bit got better this week. I'm really enjoying this act already. I like how it's such an open challenge. The kind of match is even up, with them all celebrating when their mystery golden envelope was open to reveal this as a trios match. When out came Rush Delistico, Sammy Guevara, and the Beast Mortos, La Facción de Ingo Bernabéu. Also, MXM TV continuing to heal it up, fully insulting the crowd before a bigger heel faction beats them up. Last week was the Don Callis family, this week the Hurty Lucha Men. And this week, Beast Mortos was our ringside topless luchador. Mess with the ball, you get the knees. Sammy's flatback swanton looked far more painful for Mansoor to take than the one he hit on the poor jobber last week. Like, last week it was almost flatback. You could see maybe a lot of the force being taken by Sammy elsewhere. This was bum to stomach. Like, ass right in there. Like, oh no. Did not like that. Eddie Kingston on out after the bell, and just like last week, immediately transitioning into his match, so I'll do the same too. And right into Eddie versus Beast Mortos we go. Eddie Kingston versus the Beast Mortos. Our beautiful beastie boy is so good. I'm sure we're all asking, where is Beast Mortos when he's not on our screens? Really helps that growing feeling of Eddie returning more and more to his former self as each week goes by. Even amped up enough during this week's match to do a dive to the outside, and that's with Daly's place's already established limited ringside space. He's only really just wide enough for one lying down man to fit. Mortos missed his spinning splash, and that pretty much wrote the ending. Spinning back elbow for the win, Hook on out to celebrate with his New York uncle afterwards. And onto the main event, the main reason to tune into Collision this week, the Top Gods, FTR Megan Bain versus Jet Speed and Willow Nightingale in a trios intergender match. Intergender wrestling kicks out yet again. Who'da thunk it? Both Willow and Bain came out of this looking amazing, just great stuff all around. Started off all organized and fighting between your designated pairings, teased Willow jumping at Dax, but Bain cut her off, and instead the most we got in that moment was an attempted Dax pin after, before tagging the tall and powerful lass in to deliver the slower ad break damage. Cash got off the hot tag right before we returned, to again show FTR trying to hit moves on Willow, to only have the move avoided last second. A great tease for FTR versus Jet Speed 2, with flashes of Knight and Bailey hitting their impressive quick flashes and FTR using their smarts to stop them. Really, it was Megan Bain to first properly inflict the intergender damage, powering one Jet Speed lad off, diving through the ropes onto the other. So smart to book her as the difference maker and equalizer. Tossing Bailey right onto his head made her look awesome and was the perfect setup hype to then have Willow rain hot tag fists on Dax and Cash. Bay bomb set for Bain, but Penelope Ford stopped that. A big powerful pounce sorted that out, and a great moment with all three goodies locking in half crabs and all three baddies. Stokes saved his guys, dragging them out to ringside, but that drew Deathspeed to them with their dives and left poor Willow all alone to fight against Stoke ref distraction, board interfering, and the Doomsday Device 2-on-1 finish. After the match, a tease of a follow-up powerbomb when out ran Harley Cameron, third time's the charm for the fence search. This feels like an opportune moment. The Aussie on out with a guitar neck wrapped in a chain, with all the folk around bickering and shouting different promises of beatings, and music hits, kind of. There isn't like a pop and cheer to go off air with, it's just the bickering kind of happens and that's the tone as we go off air. Not even like chaotic, just almost just like cafeteria bickering level. Like it was strange, but I absolutely adored the match itself. It's my recommendation. If you're feeling like super serious about your wrestling, sure, watch Brodido versus the Don Callis boys, but this was my match of the week. I absolutely loved it. I'm a huge fan of intergender wrestling, especially after Lucha Underground showed me this is how you do it, like to a T. Almost, this is how you present intergender wrestling and have every character feel like they could face every character. Fortunately, America wasn't ready for that, but it has been shown how to do it already. Like, there isn't, you don't have to come up with a new template because we already know how to do it. Just whenever folk are ready for it, I think the AEW done a really good job of. If right at first Warner Brothers were complaining that they did intergender matches and asked them to stop, whilst now it's just so wanted and normal, there's no complaint. Doesn't mean we're going to immediately just jump into both fighting each other. There's little things like calling it the men AEW Men's World Championship. Just if you're going to put a women's there, also putting a men's on that one as well, I feel like it's a good shift in making the women feel equal. If not allowed to do intergender wrestling, make their title feel just as special. Anyway, that was a little side tangent, but big fan of intergender wrestling. It's normally great. This was an example of it, a really entertaining main event. Anyway, this was kind of the we're in this calm period before the go home shows. This little calm period because when I come to you next week, it's finally time for Wrestle Dreams. I'll be talking about the go home AEW Dynamite show, then I'll likely just jump straight into the pay-per-view. Something I used to do when I was covering WWE stuff, where I just wouldn't do SmackDown. I'm not really going to do any shows before we get to Wrestle Dream because I normally have too much to talk about with the go home show and the show itself, so I'll just do that again. I mean, I'm hoping I've not got the dates mixed up and I've got another week to go. But please don't, I've got it right. Anyway, as always, thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any manner. Always appreciated, never take it for granted. Do send in messages if I'm wrong about any of the stuff I've said. I mean, I don't feel, I do give opinions, but I do it in such a jokey, let's just have fun talking about this thing together kind of way that I'm not really sure what messages of against what I've said you could possibly do. You know, be there. If you were to just quote me and write it down and take all of the cadence of which I spoke with, possibly. That was all the time on the internet. Anyway, I'll be back this time next week to talk about AEW Dynamite and Wrestle Dream. So with that, I bid you adieu. Ta-ra, duckies. Ta-ra.